Good evening to you, and welcome to the show, History and You, with George Rodriguez Walling.
And good evening to everyone. Welcome to History and You, the show where history matters, because you decide what history becomes. Everything has a history to it. Everything. We discuss it here. We argue it, reshape it, and give it a new focus for you to think about. I'm your host, George Rodriguez Walling, and I'm very happy to be here with you this evening. If you want to call in and contribute your thoughts and insights, please do so. Call at a toll-free number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Please call in and tell me your view on the issue tonight. If not, send me an email at historyandyou@yahoo.com. That's historyandyou@yahoo.com. You'll find me at www.bbsradio/historyandyou. That's www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. Also, please visit and support my Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube accounts on the websites as follow-up to each and every program. Tonight's show is brought to you by the folks at Avcom, where traveling safe always matters, and where safe travel is a top priority and guaranteed. So, tonight's topic is the state of democracy. We recently had the State of the Union, and I was left wondering, well, you have President Obama talking about the State of the Union. I wonder how the state of our democracy is doing as well. And so I decided to format this show, The State of Democracy. And I tried also to imagine if someone, just imagine someone coming from another country and asking the question, with ultimate curiosity, what's it like to live in America in 2013? What's it like? What's it like to live in America in 2013? Well, to answer that question, I have probably a hell of a lot of things to say about it. First of all, let me talk about democracy. Let me talk about what democracy is, some general characteristics of democracy, what it is, what it should be, what it is not. Because here in America, we do live supposedly under a democratic system. And so to answer the question, what's it like to live in America in 2013, I want to start by talking a little bit about democracy. What we have, what we do not have, what we need. Democracy is something that is very elusive, and it really requires a certain degree of maturity to understand just how elusive it can be. Democracy is relative to what a lot of people would see as being democratic. Hell, you can have people during the years of the Cold War living under totalitarianistic systems, which would say we have democracy, we have an equal distribution of goods and benefits. Our political system disseminates democracy in the best way they know how. And if they have never grown into a system where they have been unable to know or learn anything else, they do not know anything else that is remotely similar to democracy, but only the system that they grew up into. And so if they grew into a totalitarianistic dictatorial system, that's all they know. And if the system is pumping out propaganda of democracy, that's all they know. And if they tell you that they are meeting out democracy the best way they know how, through equitable and fair means, that's all they know. So democracy is relative to people. There are people that will visit America and say, hell, this isn't democracy. not in the way that we've come to know it, not in the way we've come to understand it in our country. It's not. It's something altogether different. So democracy is relative. So what does that mean for us? That means that we have to accept certain shortcomings as to what democracy is, what we would wish democracy to be. Democracy requires tolerance. It requires putting up with people. Not necessarily being peaceful, although we don't want a war scenario, but it is mutual tolerance for mutual coexistence. It's sort of like the Live and Let Live by Paul McCartney. But it happens to work. And it happens to also be, more often than not, an extremely difficult thing to do. Because people just don't want to be all that tolerant. But they have to be. You got to take the good with the bad, etc., etc. And people are not always willing to be tolerant of other people's differences, other people's ambitions, other people's drives, other people's shortcomings, other people's characteristics, other people's cultures and customs, other people's languages, other people's way of living. And while we have a right to live in the way that we wish to live our lives, we also have to be accepting of other people's ambitions and inclinations and trends. So this prerequisite of tolerance in relation to democracy has proven itself to be one of the more difficult things to do. I would further also describe democracy to be a leap of faith. A fervent and almost frightened prayer. To quote Paul Newman in a particular movie that I saw many, many years ago, it's a leap of faith in people almost wishing democracy to work. I hope this works. I hope this system of mutual tolerance works. I hope I can accept the other person's differences. I wish for the reasonableness of other people. I wish I can count on it. I wish I can put a leap of faith in the intelligence of common people in knowing when and how to make it work. Democracy is very difficult. It involves competition, but fair competition in the market. It involves public participation, and of course, it involves liberties. All democratic systems must have accountability. That is to say, the political system must be responsive to its people. It must show an institutional balance. It has to be legitimate or legitimately accepted. And I can't help but wonder, to the extent that our government today under President Obama shows true to all of these characteristics, particularly the participation of people, perhaps like myself, that don't necessarily agree with his policies, or many of them. Is there an equal across-the-board responsiveness? Is there an institutional balance? Is there a public legitimacy? Is there government accountability? The more a government meets the needs of people, the greater its legitimacy will be, and the more likely it will endure challenges and crises. And why? Well, because it meets the needs of people. It's a government that is paying attention to people that have questions, legitimate questions, about exactly what is the government doing and what is it doing for us. Democracies require periodic adjustments through reforms. Has the Obama administration been able to do these things in working with Republicans in Congress? And this is another huge issue which comes to the foreground as far as how well or what kind of leadership has Obama demonstrated to us that can make effective adjustments and reforms. For democracy to take root, political leadership has to be inclusive in all of their policies. And to the extent that the Obama administration has created supporting coalitions based on mutual consensus, has yet to be seen by and large, particularly in the large aspect of it. Inclusiveness has been so tainted with bias that one can hardly see how this administration has been able to support and create effective, mutually cooperating coalitions. And this is such an important component of a democratic system working for the interests across the board and not just in a skewed manner. This kind of leadership has to consult interest groups by including them in policy designs. To what extent does this administration provide this? They need to be informed, they being the public, of course, and the public many times receives very biased media reporting. Political leadership has to be shaped in order for policy actions of leaders to be effective. They have to be shaped by quality leadership that can affect institutions and structures and reformations and adjustments of these institutions. All of these things collectively make it a necessity to create what I have come to believe is a cultural loyalty to democracy. A cultural loyalty. It cannot be anything less than that. The wisdom of democracy comes from knowing when to show restraint, when to show toleration, and when to show good judgment. Okay? There are values in democratic beliefs, values that are important to enumerate at the moment as a reminder of what is needed to have an effective democracy. First of all, there has to be a belief in the legitimacy of democracy. That is to say, a political system has to create a sense of legalness in our democratic political system. There has to be then a belief, a public belief, in that people see the legitimacy in the democracy that is being shaped by the leadership that is at the helm of power at the moment. Tolerance for opposition parties must be present. A willingness to cooperate, to compromise, must always be present. And I mean this for both sides, just as much for the Democrats and the Republicans. And sometimes, many times, you find ourselves in loggerheads. We find ourselves so interlocked to win over our interests that nothing or very little gets done. Democracy has to find not only a flexibility in its exercise of power, but also it has to be pragmatic. What do I mean by that exactly? It has to be functional. In order for it to be truthful and evident, it must serve a useful, practical function. And what is that function? To adequately and fairly represent the interests and the needs of people. Without that, it has no pragmatism behind it. And lagging behind, it will show very little purpose behind it. In order for democracy to work, you have to have a trust in the political environment. And so many people today, so many people finding reasons to doubt the trust in political government. Is it partially to blame for the Republicans in Congress? I'm not denying that. But the leadership that comes from the top is what the public mostly looks at. And what they are looking at, they are looking with a progressive degree of doubt in their leader. Democracy must find cooperation with political competitors. And to the extent that this takes place, there has to be moderation in political positions. You cannot have everything swinging toward the Democratic side or the Republican side. You can't have everything swinging toward the neoliberal side or the more classical liberal side. And you can't have everything swinging to the right either. There must be a sense of balance. There must be a sense of civility. There must be a sense of moderation for political discourse to take place effectively. Without that balance, you do not have a well-calibrated democracy. You're going to be living with a skewed democracy, a democracy that is contrived and very, very difficult to compromise on. I like to think that democracy is an ambivalence in culture, which would be an ambivalence in its experience with democracy. An ambivalence in culture is an ambivalence in its experience with democracy. If you are feeling somewhat confused or having mixed feelings or indecisiveness about democracy, it's because you had a bad experience with it. One of the final things that I want to say about the issue of democracy in relation to our kind and quality of leadership that we're getting from the White House is that as a country develops democratically, information expands. People are informed. Now, this brings on what a lot of people would see as a huge problem. Because as information expands, they get information that is biased. They get propaganda many times. And propaganda, hopefully not to an extreme extent, but you get contrived news media nonetheless. A lot of stations will view news as what they consider as being newsworthy. If they do not consider it to be newsworthy, they will not tell it. And if they do tell it, they always tell it with a twist for the sake of ratings. But the truth is rarely found. That's sort of like going to trial. You're a lawyer and you're going to trial. And many times when you go into trial, people think, oh, well, my lawyer is going to fight for what is fair and what is just. And that's simply not so. When you go to trial to win and nothing less than that. And why? For the simple reason that your client is not paying you huge sums of money to be fair and to be just. He's paying you to win and nothing less than that. Well, then when we're listening to news media, we're hoping to get the truth, and what you're really getting is news media bias. You get it all the time. There's no exception to that. You get it all the time. And in getting it all the time, you have the liberal bias and you have the conservative bias. And there's got to be an in-between at some point. There's got to be a sense of media balance. When information expands and media perceives itself in having a larger and larger role, this is where it creates in the mind of the public a sense of public awareness. And within this sense of public awareness comes creativity, the individual initiative to be creative and to do things, because they are now made aware of new conditions and new situations that's going on in the country through the expansion of media information. And this is where leadership matters. Leadership matters a lot. The kind of leadership that comes from the White House. Leadership only matters if influence actually occurs. So what I'm trying to say here, folks, is that one of the great characteristics of power is how well you can influence someone or someone's behavior in making them do what they would never, ever consider themselves doing. But they do it anyways. And why? Because they do it to please you or someone else. So leadership as a form or an expression of power only matters if influence actually occurs. That is, how effectively does a person affect the behavior of others? How does it affect other people's perceptions? How does it affect other people's attitudes? How does it affect other people's behaviors? There are two kinds of leadership exercising power here, which I want to talk about. One is a leader that transforms, transformational leadership. And the other is charismatic leadership. And to run through it very quickly, I've always seen transformational leadership as a kind of leadership that comes from a person with a vision to guide a major change, to know how to execute it successfully, to know that whenever leadership runs into difficulties in relation to working with others, that that leader will know how to compromise and co-opt and create a sense of consensus, which a leader with a vision, a leader that has a sense of substance, will always have and know how to make it happen. Does Obama have these qualities? This is the question. Does he know how to transform democratically, the idea of change? The other kind of leadership that I want to talk about is charismatic leadership, which is predominantly based on a person's charisma. Okay? It's a form of interpersonal attraction that inspires support and acceptance. It makes us support and accept someone because of his likability quality. Because this is a nice guy. There's something about this guy that makes me feel comfortable. There's something about this guy that I like, and I really can't put my finger on it, but I like him. Charismatic leaders are likely to have a lot of self-confidence, but they also have a strong need to influence people, to communicate very, very high expectations, to energize other people in their campaign. They are great campaigners, but when it comes to exercising personal power with substance and taking a long-range view on things, that can end up being quite a different question. They have personal excitement and personal confidence in expressing to people what they want, but when it comes to leadership, being put in a position of power, like in the White House, many times that pales by comparison to a true leader. And then comes the issue of propaganda. How much propaganda is there out there in terms of what the White House is putting out? Well, first of all, propaganda many times has been described as deceptive persuasion. It's a kind of persuasive speech that deceptively attempts to mislead you and making you think that it's democratic, but it's really something else, which I have absolutely no pause or hesitation in claiming that it could be socialism. The propagandist will deliberately choose words and images and the means or the methods to deliver them, in this case, through the media, in order to achieve a specific response. The aim of propaganda is to propose one point of view predominantly, to the exclusion of all others. Propaganda is distinct from information. Information seeks to transmit facts objectively, which provides the means for someone else to collect and evaluate evidence. Advertisement. You are bombarded with ads all the time, but to the exclusion of only one idea? Hardly. In propaganda, you are inundated down to the core of your mental psyche to buy into body and soul one idea at the exclusion of everything else, which leaves out clearly propaganda or clearly the idea of what seems to be democracy, and many times it is not. I want to read you something, a couple of things from a book written by Robert Bork called Slouching Toward Gomorrah. And Robert Bork, in case you didn't know, was a judge, among many other things, and having many other accomplishments. He was a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals. And he describes our democratic condition in the following way, and I quote, "Unlike the sudden cataclysm that overtook the French monarchy, ours appears to be a slow crisis, a hollowing out of democracy from within that gives ample warning of the unhappy condition toward which matters tend. Modern liberalism is fundamentally at odds with democratic government because it demands results that ordinary people would not freely choose. Liberals must govern, therefore, through institutions that are largely insulated from the popular will. The most important institutions for liberal purposes are the judiciary and bureaucracies." Does that sound familiar in terms of how our bureaucracy has expanded and how the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of Obamacare? "The judiciary and bureaucracies are staffed with intellectuals, which tend to share the views and accept the agendas of modern liberalism." There is another part here that Robert Bork goes into, which I care to share with you as well. "As government spreads, bureaucracies get beyond the power of the elected representatives to control." In other words, it's grown too big to control, way too powerful. "Government is too big, too complicated. There are too many decisions continually to be made. The staffs of both the president and Congress have been so enlarged in the effort to cope with the workload that both institutions have become bureaucratized. The result is a serious institutional overload for all branches of government." Something to think about. And I'd like to leave you also with one final thought regarding democracy. This comes from the French novelist Romain Rolland. And he says, and I quote, "The pessimism of the intellect, but the optimism of the will. The pessimism of the intellect, but the optimism of the will." Intellectually, we see how democracy has come to be fraught with all sorts of weaknesses. However, if we will it to change it, we can make a difference. And so we talk here now about the Obama leadership, the bureaucracy, the entitlement programs, the spending, the regulations, the job issue, the leadership issue, the propaganda issue, and to what extent do we have a working consensus? You know, I was talking to a very dear friend of mine only a few days ago, and we were talking about this very same issue, and we were trying to figure out why was Obama reelected? What was it about Obama that got him reelected? And of course, that opens up all sorts of doors to begin to engage in all sorts of guesswork, and we all know that. But I came to the realization that the Obama administration offered people in this past election something that people couldn't help but to pass up. And what was that? A government dependency. I came to realize that the Obama administration provides for people through entitlement programs, through bureaucratic programs, through excessive allocations of money, through irresponsible spending. It creates programs to support people. And I'm not here to say that there aren't people out there that deserve government assistance. Of course there are, and there will always be. But these programs have expanded so much, and it has allowed for so many other people who do not deserve this kind of government assistance to take advantage of it. And it has created, it has nurtured a system of dependency. You know, as a fan of history myself, I can recall during the Great Depression, not that I lived in those years, I'm not that old, but in reading about those times, Hoover advocated a mantra, a slogan called rugged individualism. And what rugged individualism advocated was a sense of what got us to be a great nation as a people, as a political system, as almost a political religion, was our sense of individuality, our content of character, our strength, and our sense of individual will to be strong enough economically, militarily, and politically to persevere. You do not need, in moments of great economic peril, government assistance. If we give you too much government assistance, it's going to appease the public too much. It's going to create in the public mind a sense of government habit to depend on the government for everything. And it's going to begin to weaken our sense of character, our enrooted democratic character, our matrix, as it were. It will be recalibrated. It will move on its axis. And once it does that, that can be problematic. Well, a lot of people didn't buy it. And probably rightly so, because the public was suffering. There were Hoovervilles out there, all over the place, as a public protest to Hoover that he was being cold and insensitive to the economic needs of people, that the government would not participate in any way in helping to feed the families of people. And people were probably right. But so was Hoover. Hoover had a point in that if you appease the public through public dependency programs too much, that can change the democratic matrix of our people and our customs and cultures and our country. So, to the extent that Obama has attempted and is continuing to attempt that change on its axis is a judgment call on your part. There's a lot of liberalism out there, so I don't mind at all bringing out a more moderate or, if not, conservative point of view. Yeah, conservative. It's almost nowadays like a breath of fresh air, if only for one reason and one reason only, to recalibrate that institutional balance of politics. It is a necessary thing to do. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to start talking about the state of our democracy and the things that I see that are in question, that are in peril. Going back to the original question of what is it like to live in America this year, in 2013, well, you can begin to expect a gradual and progressive denial of faith and God. Something that is so central, so embedded in the psychic and in the faith and in the life of people. And this visitor to our country will gradually encounter a denial of faith and God. And you find it in so many places. And it's been challenged in so many different ways in the court systems. You see it in the issue of Christmas. You see it in the location of schools and public places. Or you can't say God, or you can't insinuate the idea of God. No matter how people may perceive God to be, you cannot even acknowledge him. This is a battle that seems to be gradually being lost through the efforts of the radical liberals. And I say radical without any restraints. It is an extreme form of liberalism to wipe out anything and everything that was originally started as a challenge to faith. A need to restore faith back into our system is what we need to see more of. The idea of classical liberalism, there is nothing wrong with. The Jeffersonian concept of separation of church and state, I see it as a systematic protocol of political balance. But you still had religion, and you still had the private right to worship. Thank God we still have private schools. But watch out, be careful, because in private schools, it's got to be identified as to whether it's a religious private school, which so far, thank God, we have, and a secular or non-religious private school where you cannot bring religion in. So you will gradually find a denial of faith in God. You can expect to find more materialism and immortality. So that through materialism and an excessive form of materialism, people will begin to adopt new ways of feeling younger and looking younger. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you take it to an extreme, you begin to think that you're going to be young forever. And you're not. You're going to get old, everything wrinkles, everything sags, gravity does its damage. And there's no way around it. You can expect to find a drop in family values. And you know what? Having dinner with the family, all together, regardless of whether your parents are professionals or not, you must have dinners together. It's important. It's cohesive. It glues the matrix of from the place that everything springs out from. It does matter to be together. Too much independence from that, and too much sense of feeling the need to be more of an individual, can present danger. No. You have to have that family cohesiveness. If not, you are inviting a gradual deterioration. The family is important to be together and hopefully not to fight. Let me take a quick pause here at this point to remind our audience, for the participants who wish to call in with their questions or comments, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or just send me an email at historyandyou@yahoo.com. That's historyandyou@yahoo.com. I'd really love to hear from you, so please give me a call. Let me also mention a quick word here about the value of AVCOM, the people that are presenting this show to you. Airline companies, please listen up. This is a company that truly makes flying the safest and fastest way to travel. And the folks here at AVCOM really do go out of their way to make sure that all your destinations are met. What do these folks do? Well, they make sure that all instruments and commercial airliners are in proper working order. Is that important or what? They also maintain all flight systems according to federal government codes and regulation standards. And why do airlines pay attention to AVCOM? AVCOM is one of the largest third-party automatic test equipment operators in Miami. Okay? AVCOM Technic is part of the 145 FAA and EASA, as well as CAAC-approved repair facility, in business for well over 25 years. Operating in 17 automatic test equipment systems, AVCOM is widely considered one of the largest third-party ATE operators in the world. AVCOM provides repairs, overhauls, and modifications to nearly every high-end avionics systems and associated components. They've also been approved by avionics repair stations for many of the world's airlines, like Aero Turbine, AeroSail, Air Transat, Air Wisconsin, Allegiant, Aloha Air, Cargo, Boeing, Capital, Calm Air, Delta European Air Transport, etc., etc. Give these folks a call at 305-436-0300. That's 305-436-0300, or you can check them out on the web at www.avcom-avionics.com. Okay, let me continue with some of the things that you can expect as the visitor who comes to America and tries to find out what it's like to live here in America in the year 2013. And before I continue, do we have any other callers online? Nope, I don't think so. Okay. I think that one of the other things that you're going to find is the idea of self-preservation. People many times are into whatever they do for themselves. There is a sense of public selfishness, in other words, that is going around. Different from the quality of times that perhaps pervaded the signs of the times 40, 50 years ago, where you had evidence, more often than not, people wanting to help other people. People being more serviceable. People being or offering themselves to be more useful in helping you out. Now, I see more than ever before a sense of self-preservation. I'm in it for myself. I'm in it for what is considered to be number one, me. And everyone else can take a back seat. The only person that matters here is me. The next thing that you can find is government, politics, and leadership. To what extent has it been contrived? Diluted. The quality of leadership, which I've already spoken about, has been what? Has come to what conclusion? Has given us what examples? Have inspired us to become what? Where has public leadership through government led us to? The next thing that you can find is the lack of service. You find that in companies everywhere. They're in it for the buckage. They're in it for the earnings. They're in it for the money. And what business is not? But at the cost of service, the quality of service has diminished drastically. So if you come to expect service, what you're going to get is calling a company and getting an incredibly enormous labyrinth of being connected to one place, transferred to another, communicated to another, and it becomes a maze that people simply come to the point where they feel helpless, they feel lost, they feel frustrated, they feel angry, and they simply hang up. People in companies do not wish to talk to the public any longer. They are not interested at all and in any way possible to helping you. In getting a human being on the line, good luck. The next area that I want to talk about is education. And this is going to be probably for me a 2 to 3 program, 2 to 3 hour program that I am making myself prepared to present, because there's a lot to say in education simply because I'm a teacher. But education, to the extent that it has diminished in quality of teachers, that it has diminished and been confused in the quality of instruction, to the extent that it has diminished in the quality of giving students something to learn about, something to think about, is dramatic. Teachers many times teach well, but teachers, through the administration of many schools, have found enormous problems with discipline, with trying to reinvent the wheel in making teachers find other ways to find learning more meaningful. And they forget that if a wheel is working, leave it the hell alone. Oh, no. But we don't do that. And in education, what you are going to find also many times is the incredible moral inappropriateness that goes on with students. But these are issues that I am prepared to present in probably a 2 to 3 part show. But that's going to be huge. When it comes to crime, well, in crime, you can expect in some places of this nation for the police to respond instantly and adequately and with great sense of leadership and devotion to what they have become, police officers. And in other areas, you are going to find that police officers should not be police officers at all. If there is a break-in, if there is domestic family violence, if there is anything worse than that, police many times will simply take their time in addressing the issue. Unfortunately, this is a reality. That is not pervasive in every nook and cranny of the U.S., but in some places, it is ever so prevalent. The next area is marriage. With the amount of divorces going about, one can hardly think that marriage as an institution will last. What has more longevity? Let's live together and see how we get along. Well, what about courtship? What was the whole purpose behind that? Wasn't that to, like the song goes, to get to know you, getting to know you, getting to know all about you? Whatever happened to courtship? Oh, no. Let's live together. Let's consummate what is not a marriage, but let's consummate a relationship of some kind, and let's just see how it works out. There's no sense of formal commitment, let alone the dysfunctionality of the family in relation to kids and divorces and remarriages and stepkids and half-brothers, what a mess. And yet it all starts with the family. And we all have our stepdaughters and kids. I have them as well. But if we would have chosen better, if we would have had more moral responsibility or a stronger sense of compass, maybe the outcome might have been different. Retirement is another thing that is in great peril. We don't know when to retire because retirement economically has become such a dangerous thing to consider because we may not have enough money to simply not make it happen. Let me run through so many other things that I think you guys out there should really listen to. You really should pay more attention when you visit the U.S. and see what it's like to live in America in this year. Think of the state of the media. Think of promiscuity. Think of public morality. Think of the issue of foods and what foods are healthy for us, what foods are not. Many times people tell us, no, you can't eat certain foods. Oh, yes, no, you can have these foods now. But then 7 years later, they change their mind. No, eggs are no longer good for you. But at one point it was. And then they change it back again. So micromanagement in companies. What the hell is that? Whatever happened to the sense of having a corporate substantial view on things? Take a look at the long view on things instead of micromanaging everything. Manners and courtesy in public, huge issue. Huge. Because there's such little of it. People on their cell phones all the time. I think that's self-explanatory, especially when driving. Drugs and alcohol speaks for itself. The mental health of people, are they being adequately addressed? Sex sells. Unfortunately, for public morality, it sells. And it sells big. It sells huge. Is that a problem? Credit. You can't do anything without credit. TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, the three major credit bureaus, will dominate your life. And the U.S., I would consider, is in danger of being yet another civilization moving away from God. And now we've come to that final part of our program where I wish to leave you with a final thought to consider and to reflect further regarding the signs of our times. And believe me, folks, the sign of our times is a very important thing to consider out there. Final thoughts. Democracy is delicate and requires advanced citizenship. If the individual will doesn't want to make it work, if the individual will doesn't want to preserve it, then expect socialism through an excess of regulation, spending, and mounting bureaucracy to choke it away. But most important, a nation cannot survive without the national embrace of God as the ultimate source for moral guidance. Democracy is inclusive, but it should never trade away the strength of our resolve that measures our character to be free and productive individuals under God, as stated in our pledge, quote, one nation under God, unquote, which lives indivisibly for the pursuit of our democratic fate. Join me again next Tuesday night at 7 p.m. by visiting my website at www.bbsradio.com/historyandyou. That's bbsradio.com/historyandyou. And please remember to visit and support my Facebook and Twitter links on the website as follow-up to each and every program. As your host for this evening's show, this is George Rodriguez Walling, wishing all of you a very, very pleasant evening. Good night.